Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to So I Got to Thinking, the weekly Sex and the City podcast, where we take the iconic questions of Carrie Bradshaw and apply them to modern life and love. As ever, you are listening to Juno Dawson and Dylan B. Jones, and this week we are joined by a very special guest, and she is a wonderful journalist. She's the author of the novels Scenes of a Graphic Nature and Promising Young Women, and the forthcoming All Our Hidden Gifts. It's Carolina Donoghue.
What a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me on.
No, thank you. Thank you very much as well. And you are a distinctive guest because you are our first guest where a publicist reached out to us.
No! I would have thought you got that every fucking day, no?
We have people begging to come on. But what we don't have is like legit like publicists. Like, I know Caroline on social media. I know your publicist, but she approached me in a very formal way. Hello, I represent Carolina Donoghue, and I would love for her to appear on your best-selling podcast. And I was like, Rosie, you could have literally DM'd. It would have been fine.
Oh, I love that. I really feel like I've arrived now.
You are. If you were not legit before, you're legit now.
Yeah, that's it.
And also, Caroline, you are a Sex and the City super fan. You have your own podcast, which is called Sentimental Garbage, but also you've just launched, or you're about to launch, mm-hmm. a brand new podcast with Dolly Alderton, which is exploring Sex and the City. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, and this is a world exclusive, everyone, so I'm glad that I have a drink. So we're launching a mini series within Sentimental Garbage because me and Dolly have been friends a long time. I always wanted to be on the podcast because we talk about sort of chick lit and trashy novels. And actually, Juno's going to come on the podcast and I have her choice right here.
For viewers, Caroline is holding up a copy of If Only by Jerry Halliwell, the novel which has most formed my self.
It just arrived today. I'm so fucking excited. So we decided the thing that we actually love talking about the most is Sex and the City. So we've decided we're going to talk about every season of Sex and the City. One episode, one season. Talk about every season for the great American novel it truly is. We're going to talk about the themes, the character journeys, the arcs, you know, like zooming out and examining each of these seasons for, you know, this great pieces of work that they are. Because we're just fans and we just want to fan out, much like yourselves.
Well, I mean, when Dylan and I started this, we were just kind of like, do you know what? If this was just us talking about Sex and the City for the next 3 or 4 years, great. Yeah. And if anybody else wants to listen, even better. So the fact that several thousand people are now listening every week is lovely. And I'm going to say I will certainly be listening to yours and Dolly's deep dive as well. So I'm very excited.
I never get tired of people just blithering on about this show. It's so comforting. What is it about podcasts where it's just people who like each other talking about a show everyone likes, where it's just like, it's so, when you're in that kind of low quarantine space where you can't really take talking to people and you can't really take learning about something new, chatty podcasts is just the bam, I think.
Yeah, and especially a chatty podcast about Sex and the City. I think Sex and the City, we've had so many guests saying, and I'm sure listeners are nodding along at the moment, so many guests saying like it's the comfort show, isn't it?
Yeah,
which is strange in a way because it's not like, it's not as immediately comfortable as a show like Friends. It's quite a lot of it is uncomfortable, but I think it's just the fact that so many of us grew up watching it and watched it when we were teenagers.
And like watching it at like sleepovers and it kind of being the late night sort of like, you know, it's like the Euro trash for girls who wanted to live in Paris.
Before Emily in Paris,
exactly.
Which has been nominated for 2 Golden Globes.
Why?
I don't know.
Well, I May Destroy You has 0 nominations. Yeah. I'll just leave that with listeners.
Yeah.
this week we are discussing season 3, episode 16, Frenemies. Mm. Dylan, do you want to give us your potted synopsis?
Yes. So Samantha and Charlotte get in a bit of a tiff over Charlotte's perception of Samantha's sexuality and vice versa, which I think turns out to be like a really lovely, interesting storyline, but we can get into that. And yeah, so Charlotte and Samantha are kind of intertwined, and then then Carrie and Miranda are intertwined when Miranda dates an ex of Carrie's and he turns out to be an asshole.
You're an asshole.
And Carrie attempts to teach a learning annex for single women as well.
Oh my god. So that is the part of this episode that I would really like to start with.
Yeah, shall we just start? Shall we start right in?
I think so, we do. We need to start with Carrie's learning annex. Because
I'm glad,
as soon as I sat down, I thought Caroline is going to have a lot to say.
I'm really glad I didn't pay $300. Let's put it that way.
So, okay, do you know? I feel like you relate, and I certainly relate to the learning annex section of this in a huge way, because I don't know if everyone knows this, but when you're a lady who writes on the internet, there's a certain kind of cottage industry that exists around lady advice giving to other ladies. Sometimes it's, you know, a Grazia event. Actually, the first time me and Juno ever met was when I was miking her up for a pool event when I was working at the pool. And there is this funny little industry that exists, and $300 a class is the exact right amount of money. It's too much to say no to. It's not enough to be humiliated. And the thing is that at these things, and whether it's a panel or whether it's an advice thing or whether it's a, you know, basically this is kind of Carrie Bradshaw's masterclass, you're always, by definition of having been asked to do this thing, have to sound like you're an expert, because that's the way they bill it and that's the way they sell it. And then you arrive and you say your little, basically you say tweets at people.
Yeah.
And you have your little like bon mots and you feel like you're Barbara Streisand. And then when anyone tries to get to the meat of any kind of conversation, everyone on the panel realizes there's no meat there. And you're all just, and you have that moment where you're like, oh, we're just 4 ladies blithering on about nothing.
And you do, you, I mean, I've been, I remember notably travelling, and oh my gosh, it was, we come full circle, because I was on a panel with Dolly Alderton, mm-hmm. and we were sent and paid quite handsomely to travel to Latitude, and wow. We had this quite literary event with Kate Moss, and it was me, Dolly, and the very literary and very great author Natalie Haynes, who writes kind of like retellings of Greek myth.
And I'm guessing that's Kate Moss with an E.
Kate Moss with an E, not
I had a different vibe in my head.
So my Kate Moss will always be the author of Labyrinth, Kate Moss. And I think there was the exact point on the panel where Dolly and I realised we just weren't on the same sort of literary plane as Natalie. And we were like, hi. Just smiling and raving on the most boiling hot day at Latitude Festival as well. It was so warm. And I was kind of like, I'm in a field in Norwich. Like, what?
What? Yeah, you always have this moment that you don't have with other parts of your career where you're just like, what am I doing?
So I've done it once, and it was a pride, right. It was a pride talk for an oil company.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was
the
20
true
minutes
meaning of pride.
Yeah. Well, yeah, right. It was in that, it was in those 2 years, 2017, 2018. Pride went absolutely insane. Like, there was a Pride brunch, like, every hour on the hour for, like, 2 months, I swear. But, yeah, it was a very similar situation to what you guys are saying. Like, I had my kind of notes planned, and it was supposed to be 20 minutes, and I stood up and I, like, said my bits, and, like, only 5 minutes had gone past, and then I was like, shit.
Yeah. And well, that is captured so well in this episode, where she, so she, Carrie comes in and she's like, there are approximately 2 million men in this in this city, and I've dated about a million of them. And they're like, ha 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 ha.
Yeah.
She cracks another joke. It lands kind of softer, and then it kind of sputters out like a broken car.
But
and
how did Carrie think she was going to fill 90 minutes with three lines?
Over several weeks.
Yeah. Well. And then she's like complaining about it to Miranda, like, they all hated me. Well, it's like, well, you didn't do any, you
do
didn't
anything.
Prepare. Like, you didn't even prepare. That's
but
the
weirdest part is that she did prepare, because in the opening scene, it's Miranda gets stood up. She called Carrie. She has a whinge. She, Carrie's like, oh, I would meet you for a drink. I would love to, but I'm working. And like, Carrie's whole setup in Act 1, Scene 1 is she's working, in quotations, on this learning annex course.
Oh, yeah.
But what is she working on? Like, is she at least, you think she at least has, like, oh, the history of dating dates back to the Victorian age and blah, blah, blah. And, like, you would think there would be some insight, but it appears as though she really has nothing.
The Merriam-Webster Dictionary defines dating.
Merriam-Webster.
There's nothing there. And I just love it when she's, boom, bright lights, date city.
And they're all like, what?
How many words?
Okay, my favourite thing in the world is to, particularly for Sex and the City, to freeze frame whenever a piece of text appears on the screen and to see, like, what it actually says. And I took a picture of, like, the advertisement for Bright Lights, Date City. And I'm convinced that Carrie wrote her own bio. So.
Amazing.
If you're considering taking the plunge, let star columnist Carrie Bradshaw be your guide. No one knows more about Sex and the City, so get your condoms, grab a notebook, and a number two pencil. I think number two pencil is such a Carrie-ism, isn't it?
It is. That kind of that unnecessary detail. Yeah.
Oh, Carrie. I mean, how do we think that class should have gone? Like, if you were a customer, had you bought a ticket, what would you have expected from Carrie Bradshaw?
Well, I think I would have respected her the second time round, you know, when she's like, right, let's all go to the bar. I would be like, okay, yeah, all right, cool, like, this is nice.
An approach that would not have worked had all 300 people shown up.
Yeah.
But also, I think that's a really good question, Juno, because I think what those women were expecting is basically like a Helen Gurley Brown sort of Sex and the Single Girl version, where it's like extremely didactic advice that nobody takes but everyone is comforted by, where it's like, honey, you always gotta wear black, you never gotta do this, don't take his call, leave it 2 days before you call again. You know, that really like extremely formulaic dating advice that exists, that kind of 90s Cosmo thing.
The rules,
yeah. Exactly. Rules. Yeah.
I wonder as well if it was now, so in the year 2021, if what you would expect would be wellness. So you can't love someone until you know yourself. And I wonder if some of those women were expecting more of how to psychically and mentally ready yourself to be open and vulnerable to a potential partner.
But you know what, you know, that is such a good call, because there is another season, I think it's season 4, where Charlotte's just coming off the back of her divorce with Trey, and she goes to exactly what you're describing, and Carrie goes with her, and it's all this lady being like, oh, did you write down your intentions, all this stuff, and Charlotte puts up her hand and she's like, I don't know what I'm doing wrong, and the woman is like, oh, well, try harder, and Carrie grabs the mic, and it's the moment I love Carrie the most, where she goes, she's trying. Believe me, she just really sticks up for Charlotte in this really lovely way. And like, maybe, I would love to know if they reused extras for that scene, because those women would go to that.
I mean, they turn on her. Oh my God, and they turn on her so fast. It's like they're starving lionesses who have realised that Carrie is in fact a tiny warthog and they can eat her.
Well, it's when that woman stands up at the back and she's like, then why are we paying to hear you talk about it? And it's like, ugh.
That woman delivers that line so well.
Good,
she's like,
well,
why are we paying to hear you talk about it? And also that like lovely like girl in her early 20s that shows that, I guess, she's like, listen, she's older than us.
Which is worse. It's worse than the have you ever been married lady, who is, I mean, savage. But I think we've got six of one, half a dozen of another, in that we have an incredibly demanding audience and a very unprepared speaker.
And not a good combination.
Oh, it's, oh, but you know what I love as well? One of my favourite repeated Sex and the City-isms, and it happens rarely enough for me to really love when it happens, is like, we see Carrie in this sort of bubble all the time of being like this minor New York celebrity, and she can kind of talk her way into and out of everything, and people find her really charming, and she sort of exists to a very elite subset of New Yorkers, and they all love her and they all know her. But when she breaks out of that and she has to sort of pretend to be a celebrity, and it sort of all kind of blows up a bit, and people are like, well, who the fuck are you? Like when she goes to LA and she's opening for a dog.
Oh my god, yes, the book tour.
Mr. Winkle, I believe.
Yes, Mr. Winkle. That's a cute top.
When is Mr. Winkle coming out? In just a very few moments.
In just a very few moments.
The nearest I've been was when I agreed to do a Guardian masterclass. And oh, wow. I'd done them before. So the Guardian makes quite a lot of money. I don't know if it's, well, obviously not in the time of COVID, but pre-COVID they were raking it in, sort of offering up sort of mid-level authors to do sort of writing workshops for people who want to be authors. And I'd done guest slots as part of Laura Dockrell's, the very great author Laura Dockrell, and I would go in for literally an hour and just talk about YA fiction, and then I would chip off, and then they said, we want you to do a full weekend YA workshop. Now, it turns out a Friday, Saturday, Sunday residency at The Guardian is quite a lot of material.
Yeah.
And it turns out, like, after I did Boom, Bright Lights, Date City, now, let's all read Twilight. It didn't go down very well, I must...
Yeah. But
I will say this, and when it, so basically, I'd sort of printed out, probably illegal, but I'd printed out sort of excerpts of chapter ones, which I thought were really gripping and would, you know, get the attention of any literary agent in the business. And there was a writer in the group, and she was just like, well, I just think these are all terrible. And I was like...
Rude.
Bright Lights, Date City.
From now on, whenever I'm stuck for something to say, I'm just going to say, Bright Lights, Date City.
Or just take people for a cocktail, in which case nobody is going to care.
That works
too. They'll
be
drunk. Yeah.
That works. In fact, I actually have done that.
Although I will say in my defence that in that cohort, because they only ran it once because it didn't do particularly well, one of the cohort was Sophie Cameron, who got like a 2-book deal at Macmillan Children's Books. So
come through, Sophie.
So there you go. So yeah, it could have been worse.
What I'm interested in is this sort of this thing that Carrie is doing, and this thing that I mean, obviously the you teaching people how to write YA fiction is legitimate because that's an actual thing that you are skilled in and are an expert in and therefore can speak confidently of, whether or not it's hard to stretch your material, whatever. But like these things, like the very nebulous sort of like how to be a good lady sort of talks. Why is there such a booming industry for them and not for men? Like I've never heard of a man going to a class in the evening or a...
Jordan Peterson.
That's the equivalent. Mm. Okay.
Oh God, that's so depressing. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like these talks are a bit like, well, I guess there's TED Talks and stuff now, but like the concept of like a learning annex in that sense is perhaps quite 90s. I feel like that's like even pre-COVID.
Yes. The idea of like a night class.
Yeah, like it's not as much of a thing anymore, I don't think, is it? Perhaps.
I think the talk is a booming, and you can, you know, if you are at that, I mean, let's say again, Jordan Peterson, he's probably charging £45-50 a ticket. And you know, similarly, if you want to go along and hear Catelyn Moran speak, normally it's you know, £20, but you'll get a copy of the book, kind of. And that's kind of how it works. So there's definitely an industry for it. Often it is tied to a non-fiction book or some sort of, again, wellness is a massive multi-million-dollar industry. And I think Caroline's right. I think that sort of the wellnessy side of things is marketed more towards women than it is towards men.
And weirdly, like, so men have, like, Jordan Peterson and Sam Harris and Joe Rogan, and they're, like, the Elvis Presleys of that sort of
maybe, like, Russell Brand as well.
But are there, like, and maybe I just don't know enough about, like, male media in general, are there, like, micro versions of that, like, Who's the male me? Do you know what I mean? Like, someone who's sort of, like, in the middle tier. I wonder, does that exist? Or is it only these, like, huge stadium-filling
guys? I don't know, maybe like a Joe Wicks.
Oh, he's huge.
He's huge. Yeah. He's the most famous person in the country.
Can you tell I've just been, like, completely checking out of the news and media lately? Like,
fair enough.
I'm trying to think. There must be some sort of middly ones. I'll tell you just quite well, is lovely Aaron, who is at Technically Ron on Twitter. He's kind of become one of those, sort of, he does a lot of speaking around the fact he has acute anxiety. Johnny Benjamin does a lot of stuff around mental illness. So actually, mental illness in men has become a bit of a cottage industry, because I think sometimes that the whole sort of, like, men need to talk and men need to open up, that's kind of, it's like a subsection of talks around mental illness, which I think do happen quite a bit.
Well, that's something.
Yeah, that's a good thing. And certainly there's plenty of podcasts out there about men's mental health and men needing to speak out. And Prince William's done a whole bunch of stuff around male mental health as well. He's quite famous because he's going to be the next king or something.
Yeah. Would we call Prince William famous?
slightly famous.
C-list.
I think it's a whole thing. Certainly with often they're sort of attached to some sort of a festival of some sort, where you have kind of like Fern Cotton, who I know and love. Fern has done a whole thing called the Happy Place Festival, which is just, so it's like a music festival without music. And actually Russell Brand did headline one year at the Happy Place. But that's it, again, it's all those kinds of people delivering talks, like Pauna Bell, Bryony Gordon, all those kind of people sort of delivering talks about addiction, wellness, fitness, diet, veganism, yoga, kind of all those kind of things. And Carrie Bradshaw would 100% be a part of that, but it's a shame that her talk is quite shit.
Right, Light State City. What did you guys think of the other dynamics going on in this episode?
Yeah, I was just gonna say, should we move to? Should we move to Miranda next?
Well,
Miranda.
Let's take a tiny break,
yeah,
and then we'll be back to talk about Miranda and Charlotte and Samara. See you in a sec.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
And welcome back to So I Got to Thinking. This week we are joined by the author and journalist Carolina Donoghue, and we are talking about episode 16 of series 3, Frenemies. So let's get to the actual frenemies of the episode, shall we?
On the wide, like, there are some Sex and City episodes where it, like, it takes the theme, like, whether it's, like, a certain kink or a certain relationship behaviour or whatever, and it's really good at sort of assigning every single side of that theme, every, like, side of the prism, to each character and to each dynamic. This is not one of those episodes. Oh, like, yeah, there is no reason this should be called Frenemies, this episode.
This was all over the shop, yeah. And as we was, and the question, are we getting wiser or just older, doesn't really...
has nothing to do with anything.
And is also very similar to the last week, to last week's question. Are we 13 going on 30? It's the same question. Was that last week? Yeah.
That was literally last week, yeah. Well, let's just ignore the question. We'll answer the question at the very end.
Yeah.
To my mind, the most interesting part of this episode was the exploration of the Madonna whore complex.
Yeah, loved it.
I would have rather the whole episode would have been around
this
notion that women in the world can broadly be divided into Samanthas or Charlottes, and never the twain shall meet. And it was all, they were as Carrie says to Miranda, it was always heading for a showdown.
Mm.
You know, we've already had Charlotte storming out of a restaurant following Funky Spunk this series, and this time she's never coming back. Was it inevitable that Samantha and Charlotte were going to fall out?
It's so funny, 'cause I do feel like that there are several, like, fallouts that happened between the girls among the series. And Charlotte is often the common denominator because even though she is so soft and so femme, she's also very rigid and very conservative, which is what brings her sort of approach to the show or whatever. But this thing of, like, the fact, it's so funny, isn't it? That just to have that cut of just Samantha and Miranda and Carrie going down the street afterwards being like, oh, well, we always knew it was going to happen. And it's those interesting friend groups that sort of develop without anyone noticing. And it's like, well, why would those two be friends anyway? You know, they really don't share much in common. They sort of disgust one another most of the time. And their fallout in this comes down to, and I think it's actually very real, where it's Charlotte's having this impotence problem with Trey. Like, she'd been married to him for how many months and they still haven't really had sex. And then Samantha is, like, sort of blowing her mouth off about, like, oh, yeah, I almost broke the bed. I was getting fucked so hard, whatever. And it rankles Charlotte because... here she is, and this is a common theme with her, of, like, she's trying so, so hard to do something that other people find so easy. And it's the same with Miranda when she gets pregnant, right?
Mm.
It's like, I deserve this more than you do, and you get it for free, you know?
Yeah, that's
and
true.
I think that's so compelling.
That's true. I think I agree. And something else, there's a couple of things that you've said that have made me think, which is firstly, when... Miranda and Carrie are like, we always knew this was going to happen. That's so true. There are just, in groups of friends, there are just two friends that are at loggerheads sometimes, and you always know, like, it could blow up at any minute. So I thought that was a really good, like, really accurate thing. And then also, I loved how it kind of took, because I hadn't seen this episode in a while, I like how it really cleverly took me as a viewer on a journey with Charlotte, because at first with that scene when she was really judging Samantha, I really hated her. And then the storyline made me understand why she was having these thoughts and why she said these things to Samantha. And then by the end, I was like, oh my God, I love Charlotte. When she, like, got back, when she, like, discovered, kind of got in touch with her sexuality and then kind of realized what was happening. I thought it was great. Well done, Jenny Bix, who I usually don't like.
I think the scene with Charlotte talking to Trey, where she's in the beautiful lingerie, was a big scene. And I think Kristen Davis talked about it a lot and how she was very nervous about it. And it was one of very few times that we see Charlotte's nipples, free the nipple, Charlotte. And apparently she was terrified. It wasn't a body double. They used her body. It was, I think, a really important scene where we don't see Charlotte like that very often, where she does fully own her sexuality and She tells Trey now in certain terms that I am your wife, but I am a woman and I am sexual. You know, Trey's impotence problem has been all about Trey. It's all about Schooner and never about Rebecca. you know, it's kind of, you know, that scene at the beginning where Trey loses the wind in the sails. You know, he doesn't set about pleasuring Charlotte in any other way. Yeah. He doesn't pleasure her orally or with his fingers. You know, he really does just sort of flop down and go to sleep. And it's frustrating to see her taking out that frustration on Samantha. And this, I thought the scene in the coffee shop was really good.
Yeah.
But then I love when it all comes back later when we're with Kappa Kappa Gamma. She's like, yes, what am I like? What was her name? It wasn't Courtney. There was Courtney.
It was something like Cynthia. But I loved it. Like, I both hated and loved them. They were just so like, they were kind of iconic, but they were also just horrible.
So iconic.
We're like, Charlotte.
Oh, we almost broke the bed.
Oh, Sydney.
Oh, it's just
us
girls.
Sydney, that was it. It was Sydney.
Sydney.
Oh, Sydney.
Oh, I haven't... That thing you just said about Kristen Davis being very nervous about that scene, I didn't know that, but it makes so much sense to me. And it makes me also so sad that we haven't seen Kristen Davis, like, with a major role outside of this, really, because it really makes you think, she's such a fantastic actress. And, like, the vulnerability that's just coming off of her in waves in that scene is, like, I find it really moving to watch, actually. I find, like, I get very upset when I see it, where she's... The way she delivers, like, I'm your wife, and I'm sexual. Mm. And I think as well, it, like... To borrow a phrase I've heard you guys say a few times, the womb in the room.
Yeah.
I do think this very, like, cis lady thing of, like... And you hear it happening to other women where it's like, everyone has that friend who has that story about, like, she went to La Perla and she spent like half her month's rent on some amazing get up. There's one story in particular that somebody told me that haunts my days, where she had this incredible lingerie set or whatever, and her relationship was in trouble, and she sort of descended down the stairs in this, you know, this is a beautiful girl as well, in this sort of haze of silken glory. And her boyfriend was at the foot of the stairs, and he looked up at her and he went, oh, wowza. And then he paused and said, I've just made a sandwich. And then he went and he ate his sandwich, and she sat on the couch in her lingerie and waited for him to finish his tuna toasty.
Oh my God.
Oh no.
What is wrong with straight men?
It's awful. Like, that is, like, what stops so many women, I think, from trying, from asking for the sex they want, or trying the thing they want to try, or just, like, going a little bit out there, or wearing something that's a little bit, like, trampy or whatever. And, like, that is the reaction that they fear. And I do think you see that courage coming off of Charlotte when she comes out, and Trey basically makes her feel ridiculous, but she carries on. And there's, like, I'm like, give that woman a purple medal.
Yeah. You know? I thought it was just so well... I thought it was, like, really well scripted, and, like, it didn't... Because a lot of these type of scenes in Sex and the City, they present in, like, a kind of amusing way. But this was, like, suddenly we're... It was, like, suddenly we're being serious. And it really worked.
Yeah, I think... Because I think often Charlotte is relegated to the comic relief in that she gets, like, the comedy hilarious kind of, you know... I bet you have a lovely cunt dear storyline or whatever. And so it's for her to actually flip it and go from the scene where she's been with the sorority sisters to being kind of like, I'm neither Madonna or whore. I'm a woman and I am both your wife, but I am also a sexual being. I thought it was great. And I think it kind of tackles head on that one of the criticisms of Sex and the City, which is they're all very the sexy one, the prudish one, the sarcastic one, the romantic one. And actually, they are all of them, which brings us nicely to Claire Anne.
Claire Anne.
Claire Anne. The woman that I fear that I am.
No.
Oh, the woman we all hope we are.
Claire Anne is that friend you make. This happened a lot when I was in London. And you would be at something and you met someone and you'd be like, oh my God, I think I found a soulmate. And then about half an hour later, you're like, oh no, they're mental.
You're mad.
You're like,
Yeah, it's like all that intense sparkle that was coming from our conversation is actually just a mental intensity you have with everything you meet.
Oh no, you've just thrown a bottle of champagne off the balcony. Okay, all right.
that they're ringing you at 4 a.m. like, I've been arrested, and you're like, oh my god.
So with the exception of you, Juno, that is all of my friends. My friends.
I didn't like to say, but yes.
No, I wouldn't have it any other way. But, oh God, yeah, she's amazing. You're spunky. I like spunky women.
We're a dying breed.
That whole character is lifted from like a Tennessee Williams play or something. She's like, I'm a faded Southern belle, but I know what I like.
Her acting kind of reminded me of when they have like acting challenges on RuPaul's Drag Race. Like that's
accurate.
she was played by an actress called Jane Summerhayes. I've just looked her up.
Who's won a Tony. I looked her up too.
What?
She's the least convincing person to ever win a Tony. I'm sorry, that performance isn't good. It's iconic, but it's not good. It's such mini challenge acting.
She hasn't worked since 2005, which makes me quite sad because I thought she was brilliant, but don't let the Southern accent fool you.
You would only get this in a show like in Sex and the City, in literally no other show, would you get like her kind of muffled voice saying, I'll come with you from under the table. Literally,
I'm going to eat you up.
Just ridiculous. I mean, I guess they kind of thought like, right, what can we have that would make even Samantha be shocked?
Yes,
and it had to be Claire Anne, didn't it? Like, that's the only thing.
Also, it took me... So let's say that in the history of my life, I've maybe seen this episode, let's say, 9 times. It was on the 9th viewing today that I didn't watch Samantha and I watched the man getting the blowjob. He is what we would call in the television industry, he's a non-speaking extra, so he's a non-speaking supporting actor. So that man probably wasn't paid very much, but did have to act out the non-verbal... Because if you speak, they have to pay you more.
Oh.
So he had to express delight non-verbally. And it was quite a treat. And I would advise listeners to go back and watch it from his perspective again.
Delight, both delight and fear.
Which is, I mean, how do you do that?
Also, I feel like this episode is birthed to a... You know how like when you're just on your own... And you're just trilling away, talking to yourself, and you have these little catchphrases that you just say to yourself. My one is, and you can forget Samba.
Oh my God, same. So that's what me and my friends say to each other if we like can't make it to an event or can't make it to anything, and you can forget.
It's so funny. She says it like 5 times with increasing ferocity. Yes. You can forget Samba.
Amazing. I'm so glad. One of the best things about this podcast is finding out that our guests are just as weird as we are with Sex and the City catchphrases. Are we ready for Miranda?
Miranda and Carrie's deal. Yes, with the guy with an asshole. Okay, so the guy dies.
Yeah.
I've often wondered, have either of you ever been stood up?
Yeah.
Yeah, and because of this episode. So I have been, again, trans corner, bing bong bing. I only got stood up post-transition. I never got stood up pre-transition that I'm aware of. I got kind of like the 11th hour cancellation, which is as good as being stood up. The kind of like, I found this particularly when I lived in London, which is, hey, are we still on for tonight? Oh, I need to do me. So there was a lot of that. But twice in my life, post-transition, I was actually at the venue. Mm-mm. Being like, so I'm here. You said you were on your way.
Oh.
That is the worst. And I never understood it. I think it, maybe if we're getting into the psychology of it, it's like a power thing. Or if we're massively giving people the benefit of the doubt, maybe they had anxiety and they didn't want to tell you.
We can blame anxiety on a lot of things.
That's true.
Doesn't mean that we can't all be adults.
That's true. Yeah.
But this may shock you. And feel free to end the Zoom call if it's offensive. But my current partner of 7 years once stood me up.
Was this early? Was this early on?
This is very, very early on. So we were friends for a long time, and then we I was in a relationship, and then I ended my relationship, and I sort of made it quite quite clear that I had ended my relationship for my friend, who was currently my partner of 7 years. And, you know, I think in retrospect, I was coming on a bit strong and being a bit mad. And so I broke up with my then boyfriend. I had to move out of our flat, and I worked with my current partner, and I was coming into work, and I was like, yeah, I'm moving out of my house this weekend. And he was like, right, that's a lot. I was like, yep. And he was like, do you want me to help you? And I was like, yes, I do want you to help me. And then he just sort of got a bit freaked out and just didn't come.
Was he dead?
Was he like dead? I had to do a whole seance thing. He's now the undead, and we're getting on surprisingly well, considering.
Amazing.
But yeah, no, but like it was horrible. And to be honest, it's something we still like occasionally when we're feeling bored and we've run out of things to fight about. We'll just be like fight about that. But yeah, it was like a thing of like he just kind of freaked out, and I was kind of coming on a little too intensely, too quickly.
Interesting.
And him helping me move out of my boyfriend's flat after I explicitly said I'm leaving my boyfriend for you.
Wow.
Was a lot, but I think I won in the end, so it's fine.
How did he come back from that? Because that's a difficult thing to come back from.
I think, to put it frankly, I was just dickmatized, you know? I just kept showing up at that house for more.
Boom! Here I am. Bright lights, Date City.
Oh my God.
Bright lights, Date City!
Can we talk about Carrie's oversized butterfly necklace?
Oh, it's dreadful.
Yeah, I don't like it. It's one of my least favorite Carrie things.
I did love, and I think that me and you, Juno, always agree on styling. So I'm sure you'll have noticed this too. Carrie's blue dress.
Beautiful. Yeah. The wrap dress was stunning, yes.
Gorgeous.
Yes. Mm. And a lovely navy jumpsuit, I think, at the end as well, which I enjoyed.
That was nice.
It's a real tragedy for necklaces all around this episode because Miranda's floating necklaces is a real theme of season three.
Her orange dress at the beginning was not good as well. That dress might have killed him.
dress with like the grey t-shirt over it. It's like, is that part of the dress?
That's what it was.
And the horrible, the kind of like amber beads with the translucent just kind of sitting on her. Oh, horrible.
I fancied Jim.
He had bad vibes, Dylan.
Bad vibes. Well, I like a man with a bad vibe.
He had a real like guy who follows you home after speed dating.
Oh god. So true.
That's so specific. But yes.
Also like very sort of like Canary Wharf arsehole as well.
100%.
Very that.
Yeah. And like I'm so interested in whatever relationship him and Carrie had 8 years ago when he was in a band and had hair he could sit on. And
I reckon it was around the same time she stopped eating food so she could read Vogue.
Yes. I agree.
She was starving and didn't mind his hair.
Just felt like it fed me more.
God, yeah.
But where do you guys stand on the whole, you know, what is the sort of statute of limitations on going out with someone your friend later goes out with?
I don't care.
Oh.
I don't care, but then I'm a gay man, so there is that.
That's the thing. When you come from like a specific dating pool, I think everyone kind of accepts that you're like, well, it's a... I mean, not London really, but like in other places, it's like, oh, it's a small enough dating community. People are going
to
fuck.
Yeah.
And well, I mean, to park us back in Trans Corner, there is a hardcore of guys in and around London who serially date trans women. And I'm not going to name names, but one of my friends' boyfriends, they broke up. And within about 48 hours, he found my number on WhatsApp and was like, hey, so are you single right now? And I was like, you broke up with my friend 2 days ago.
Wow.
And he didn't know that we knew each other. So, but
he's an asshole.
He's an asshole.
Because you're an asshole. Thank you, sweetie.
What I love about that scene where she goes for the... Miranda's like, very like, oh, you know, I feel really weird that I'm dating someone that you don't like. And Carrie's like, well, like, not pressed. And then they all go for a drink. And Carrie's behavior in that scene is why, like, we should only have women in the UN. She's so diplomatic. He keeps being really barbed towards her. And there's this great little micro moment where he orders Miranda a drink, but he doesn't order Carrie a drink, and her glass is empty. And she's like, mm-hmm. Yeah. And he's like, yeah, I lost touch with you, but I always kept up with your columns. A lot of sex in there. And she's like, it makes its way in. He's like, yeah, you always loved shoes. And she's like, yes, I did like my shoes. And it's just like so refuses to be piqued by it.
So he's like the male Claire Anne, because then all of a sudden on a dime, he's like, they come in handy when you're walking all over men. And you're like, fucking hell. Like, Jesus Christ.
I thought that was another really well done scene as well, though, because the final shot of him at the table... And they put down, like, and the waitress, like, puts down the drink. And he's just sort of sitting there angry. And you're like, oh, well, he's obviously the loser here. Like, he's the sad person here. Which I thought that was great.
And also, the extras in that scene are really... The extras in this episode in general are really giving you overtime. They're all, like, like proper shocked expressions.
The cocktail waitress watching Claire Anne go down on the man is worth a look as well. Like,
oh yeah, like, when Charlotte
just disbelief,
and when Charlotte is like, "I just want to be fucked." That was amazing, so amazing. And then dropping a note in the martini glass as she leaves—that's
so classy,
iconic.
Oh, I miss that. That is so good.
She should have added a cup of cappuccino.
A cup of cappuccino. Oh, do you know what? Generally, I'm a big fan of Carrie in this episode. But do you know what I did not appreciate? Was Carrie being a massive fucking prude at the lingerie shop?
Yeah, yeah.
Not cool.
Yeah.
Like,
when she said something like, oh, I don't need to, you need to show Trey your sexuality, but not me. Or it was something like that, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I don't need to see it.
I was like, yes, you can see your friend's sexuality and you can help her with it.
Isn't this
as well.
A job for Samantha, the PR executive, not your sex columnist friend, me?
Yeah, this is the woman who gets her friends to, like, take her diaphragm out of her. She can't look at some knickers with her pal. Like, get a life.
I love shopping with my friends because it's like spending money, but it's not your money. It's really good. You should always go, and especially even better, is flat hunting with your friends. That's really good fun.
Ooh, I've never done that. But also, like, surely lingerie shopping with your friends is the absolute top tier of shopping with your friends. I would like cheering them on, you know?
I would raise that and say shopping with drag queens is possibly the top tier.
Yeah, because you're both, like, creating a fantasy together, you know?
Yeah, in the top man, in the jewellery section of, not top man, top shop.
I wonder if there's, like, a cut scene where we actually see where Charlotte got that nightie from. Because... it kind of materialises.
Right? Like, I have questions about that nightie. Like, I feel like...
I quite liked it.
She could have pushed it, you know? She could have pushed the envelope more. I like it, but...
It's conservative but see-through. Mm. And I quite like that Charlotte's nod to sexy, which is actually, it's, like, quite covered, but...
Yeah.
You can see nips, which is exciting. So I suppose it is the mandate of the podcast that we do have to tackle Carrie's question, as bizarrely unrelated to events this. So her question was, are we getting wiser or just older?
I don't even understand where we're supposed to approach that question. It's like...
In the context of the episode, yeah. Well, I don't know, like, in my own context, I'm definitely so much wiser than I was even 3 years ago. I'm 29 now, and in my early 20s, just incomparable to how I am now. So yeah, I am getting wiser and older.
I don't know if this is true for you guys as well, but I feel like... when I was younger, my advice and my, you know, interpretations of the world were very individualistic or something. And I took everything on a case-by-case basis and I was confused by everything. But now I'm just like, well, listen, honey, men are just like this. Men can't have nice things. And I'm so much more didactic than I used to be. And I don't really have much time for fussing around in like, oh, but you know, he's just got this problem because his parents divorced when he was really young. I'm like, doesn't matter.
He's just not that into you.
Yeah, I feel like I'm more, that's where my wisdom lies right now. I'm in that quotient, I think.
Because I think maybe it's not so much that you're wiser about the world, but you're certainly wiser about yourself. And yeah, as I moved through my 30s, and this applies to all areas of my love life, my professional life, I know where my limits are, and I'm much, much readier in saying, that's not going to work for me. Would you do like a 15-stop tour of Australia? No, because I would be a nervous wreck. I can't handle that much travel. I would get homesick. I would hate being away from home. It's not going to work for me. You know, do you want to go out with this guy who's in a band? Abso-fucking-lutely not. No, no. I know myself well enough to know that that would be a nightmare for me. So you certainly know yourself better, I think.
That is a good point. And Carrie should have known herself well enough to know that she would fucking suck at a learning annex course.
And that she shouldn't wear that butterfly necklace.
No, so ugly. I think it comes back. I think it makes a reappearance as well. I think she wears it several times. And I think it was quite an expensive piece. The worst necklace that we will get to later is when Samantha is wearing a necklace that has an enormous jade egg suspended by pearls. I think it's in like season 5 or 6. So we'll keep your eye peeled for the enormous jade egg.
Oh, I look forward to her. Look forward to meeting her.
And so, Caroline, before you go, will you please tell us about your upcoming novel, All Our Hidden Gifts, which is both Caroline and I find ourselves at that moment in a woman's career where you go witchy. So both Caroline and I are going witchy with our novels in the next
very
year,
true. So. Yes, I hadn't put that together yet, but you're dead right. Yes, so All Our Hidden Gifts is my YA debut. I have 2 adult novels out already. It is about a girl called Maeve growing up in a very similar part of Ireland that I did, who finds a haunted pack of tarot cards one day, and accidentally, kind of on purpose, she ends up disappearing her ex-best friend. And then it's the whole novel is sort of a missing girl narrative, but with a huge lot of sort of queer themes and sort of a lot of the themes about Ireland and the sort of Christian Catholic fundamentalism that is slowly crawling its way back into it. There's a lot of themes going on, but everyone kisses and has fun.
Now, Dylan, would you describe yourself as a bit witchy?
Oh yeah, very witchy. And we've discussed Carrie's potential witchiness as well. She's got a Ouija board.
Carrie has a Ouija board, yeah?
Yes, yeah.
When does that happen?
It was on the foot of her bed with Aiden when, yeah, at that point where like they're eating chicken in bed, there is a Ouija board at the foot of the bed.
That's kind of hot. Yeah. Kind of hot to do in bed, right? Like, I feel
they've just finished. They've just finished the Ouija board.
Well, it's like there's like dice that you can get from like a sex shop, which tells you what position to do.
Oh my god!
I like the idea that Aiden and Carrie were like, where's it go?
Amazing!
Oh my god, those sexy dice! My god, they are the most straight person thing in the world.
My fiance has got me watching Bob's Burgers at the moment, which I resisted because I'm not a big fan of animation, and I know it's people are just counselling me as I speak, but I'm so into it. I love it so much. And Bob and Linda have sex dice, and it always seems to be sit on each other's knees, which I really love.
Oh, I love that. It's so good.
Caroline, thank you very, very much for coming on So I Got to Thinking. Whereabouts can our listeners find you on your social media?
On Twitter, I'm at Zara Line, so that's Caroline with a Z, like Russia. And on Instagram, Zara Line was somehow taken, so it's Zara Online.
There you go. And when is All Our Hidden Gifts coming out?
It's coming out in the UK in mid-May.
There we go. So make sure you pre-order right now. Next week, we will be watching Season 3, Episode 17, What Goes Around, with special guest author Tanya Byrne. Until then, you can find us at SIGTT Podcast on both Twitter and Instagram. And until then, stay safe.
Bye.
would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.